Blog Talk Radio.
For Saturday, October 26, 2019, you are listening to the PW Torch Daily Cast, and when it's on Saturday, you know it's the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I am, of course, Rich Fan, calling you from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A little rainy, a little silly, but we're still going to abide, and we're still going to talk to you, so give us a call, area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Now, in a few minutes, I'm going to be joined by my guest host today. And in the interim, I want to kind of set the stage for what we're going to talk about, and that's going to be Impact Wrestling. Now, typically when we talk about Impact, it isn't going to be something that we try to set up as a gotcha moment. It's something more or less what we're trying to do with this today, where we're going to talk about some people who kind of had their marks missed in terms of their opportunities with Impact. And the hope is by the end of the episode, you kind of see why my co-host kind of had his hair in a dander, so to speak, when it came to those issues. And so if you have any, feel free to shoot them in. You could always email me, pwtdive@gmail.com. You can always tweet me at @rich_fan. I might switch to that Rich Fan, but that's a work in progress. After being harangued by Wade on my latest appearance on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, the flagship edition, I kind of feel like maybe I should make the change, but I'm not quite sure. Anywho, we're going to get started in a moment, but what I'm going to do first is make sure my co-host is set up, so I'm going to give us a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get this party started.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. We're going to basically start with a quick chat with Kylan, and then as soon as Steve gets reconnected, we'll get the show proper started. So, Kylan, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Hopefully, you're connected and good to go.
Yes, I am, Rich. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, since you're so experienced being a co-host, I figured before Steve can connect, because we're having some connection issues with his end, I'd let you kind of set the stage for what we're going to be talking about next time we talk. And, you know, once Steve gets back, we'll put you on hold again and then come back and give you some opportunity to drop some questions and insights on today's topic.
All right, well, the next time Rich officially has me on as his co-host for the full show, Rich and I, as well as whatever callers we may have for that particular show, will be discussing wrestlers' appearances on various TV shows. Now, this episode will be considered a part two of the previous version of the episode that Rich and I did last summer, because I forgot to discuss some particular episodes of previous shows that I inadvertently left off my list from the prior show. And then after that episode, which will come up at the, which will presumably come up at the beginning of the year, I have another fun episode planned, which I'm not sure Rich was aware of, where we will be discussing failed solo transitions of tag team wrestlers, in which I pick or and Rich picks a member of an iconic or not so iconic tag team that was either forced or decided that they wanted to go singles on their own, and why that did not work out for that person.
Excellent. That sounds very appealing. And now, hold on one moment. I'm going to put you back on because my partner in crime for this week's here, and I thank you for that preview, my good man. And welcome back to the deep dive, Steve. How are you, good sir?
Not too bad. And you?
Cannot complain, even though Pitt had a horrendous game against Miami that some of my good friends, who I'll be seeing after I talk with you, my good friend, will be complaining about at dinner, and I will just stare blankly into the distance, knowing that it is as it always will be.
Yeah, I'm watching Louisville right now, and as long as we could win 50% of our games, I'm considering it a wash. We are straddling that line hard right now.
Yeah, it's, man, when you don't have a super team, or you have a super team like, say, in the case of Cam, you have a super team people assume is a super team that doesn't quite make it, it's a lot. It's a lot for us regular folk, but it's all right. It's all right. I thank you for spending some of your Saturday with us. And before we get started, why don't you tell some of the fine folks the things you do, where they can find you, and what kind of necessitated us having this chat today.
All right. Well, just kind of for starters, you can find me at Not Dr. Death is my current Twitter handle. That's NotDrDeatha. Probably the work I'm most well known for is the Songs with Friends podcast, where myself and Kelly, last name withheld for legal and other reasons, we will go into music discussion, breaking down the lyrics of songs of the past. You can find that archive at Place to Be Nation Pop in your podcast catcher. As far as today's subject, Rich, I think a lot of people know who may listen to this that you and I, we're fairly good friends, I think that's safe to say, to the point where we are in a group chat which has near constant input between us and several others. The conversations in this group chat, they can go from benign to extremely passionate and ridiculous. And the passionate and ridiculous Venn diagram was a complete circle when the subject of TNA fumbles came up. And we just started rattling between the five or so of us, just various examples. And I halted it and said, you know, this would be a great deep dive discussion. You agreed, and we got this ball rolling.
Yeah. So why don't we start with your first one? What do you think is the most egregious of the fumbled bags?
As soon as this came up, I thought of a gentleman who is now sorry about his own damn luck, and that would be Mr. James Storm. Looking back, I did a little bit of research today, and I had this weird, you know, Mandela effect moment where in the end, he eventually wins that title, and that never really happened. He won the title at the beginning, which I remembered. And this thing is more convoluted than even I remembered. But what I'm talking about here is the 2011 to 2012, the Ballad of Beer Money, Inc. going their separate ways. So I thought the James Storm won the Bound for Glory series back then. Now, for those of you younger fans, TNA / Impact, I mean, call them what you want. They will forever be a TNA in my book, because even now, Sami Callihan is their world champion. They would do a series, a tournament not unlike the G1 Climax. Not as intricate, but the same style of tournament, where they would decide who would be the number one contender at their biggest pay-per-view of the year, Bound for Glory. And that year, Bobby Roode won the tournament. lost the title shot to champion Kurt Angle. And somehow James Storm rolled into a title shot 2 days later and won the title. He held that title for all of 2 television episodes before his partner in Beer Money Incorporated, which, by the way, is an all-time fantastic team name, broke a beer bottle over his head and took the title from him. Now, you would think, all right, he got a taste of the title. In theory, people would want to see him get that revenge on Bob Roode. But that is not what happened at all due to a year plus of pandering, meandering, fiddling around, butt grabbery, just every single shenanigan they could think of to delay this happening. And by the end of it all, Austin Aries was somehow the TNA champion. And James Storm was once again a semifinalist in the following Bound for Glory series. So neither one of these men came out a winner in this. Except for Bobby Roode, who finally got rid of that sick ponytail that he had going on.
Yeah, that ponytail deal was a lot.
Yeah, real quick, let's revisit some of the highlights of this road to redemption. So he beat James Storm, beats Kurt Angle on October 18th, 2011. 8 days later, at the next taping, he loses. So this is October. He doesn't find himself in title contention again until Against All Out in February 2012, where he's in a four-way match. Not a one-on-one, let me get my revenge against the guy who wronged me, a four-way, which he again loses. He gets another title shot at Lockdown in April and loses again. He somehow, not long after this, finds himself completely on the sidelines, just out of the company altogether for 2 months. And during those 2 months, that is when everyone's famous promise ring giver, Austin Aries, swoops in and takes the title. So he comes back, he's recommitted to Bound for Glory series, and he once again is a bridesmaid of a bridesmaid. By 2015, he was out of the company briefly. He came back in 2016, reformed Beer Money, just for a few months before Bobby Roode decided he was out of there. And now he's just, he's a non-commodity as far as I'm concerned. He's a very serviceable wrestler, but I don't understand what he has to offer a national company at this point. And this was a big starting point for that fall off for him.
And to be fair, when it comes to, thank you very much. And if anyone wants to gift me and Steve some tickets to Letterkenny here in Pittsburgh, I'm not paying $150 to watch Letterkenny.
A hard no.
No flipping way, but not enough jam for me for that, my God. But he fumbled his own bag a bit, too, when he had the opportunity to be the weight loss and awesome all-star and out of Impact and into NXT and instead flip that into yet another contract with Impact.
Yeah, anybody who willingly goes back to Impact, once you're somewhat of an established name, I understand the how the Killer Crosses of the world would get themselves in this situation, having mired in the independents and just looking for an opportunity. But if you've been there, you see the disorganization, and you're on the WWE radar, by all means, get your foot in the door, guys. Any professional wrestlers out there listening to this, secure that bag. Don't go back home because that's where your childhood bed is. You are too big for that bed now.
Well, apparently he liked it for a little bit. Now, to his credit, he's doing a great job right now in NWA Power. Hashtag into the fire. And hopefully that turns into a big bag, but I feel like there was money left on the table. And I could have beer money, or as I have jokingly called them, Cerveza LLC in WWE.
Yeah, it seemed like that things were heading that way. And like you said, Mr. Storm chose to go elsewhere. He didn't want to party with the kids in Orlando. And as soon as he left, Bobby Roode came in. It's not great timing. But you know, what can you do? Sometimes it's just the way life deals you the hands.
Yeah, and speaking of hands, I think one of the people who stood out to me as an opportunity that was missed. I mean, we could talk about the easy ones. We've talked about before the Okadas and things of that nature. I mean, and we might still tonight. But for me, one of the first people I thought of when it came to Impact Wrestling and just not seeing it was, you know, current vice presidents and forever bitter Popeye's chicken sandwich eaters in the airport, the Young Bucks, or as they were known at the time, Generation Me. For the life of me, I do not understand in a division, in a company where you had all of these sociopaths throwing themselves off of things in the heavyweight division, why you wouldn't figure out doing that with your tag teams and X division guys without making the heavyweights kill themselves made sense, but I don't know. How do you feel about that? Because for me, I feel like their series with the Motor City Machine Guns, while now that you have the gift of hindsight and the benefit of years of all that was quaint, it seems that they've gone into the it's like a breakup where they're intentionally inviting you back over because they say you forgot stuff that they stole from your current place of living. It's like, hey, Young Bucks, don't you want to wrestle Motor City Machine Guns? Just do it here on Impact and not the new company you made.
You know, as the great fake boy band Together once said, the hardest part of breaking up is getting back your stuff. And TNA is trying to get those Bucks back on board, if not just for one buy rate. You know, please, someone draw us more than 10,000 buys. You guys can do it. Come sprinkle some of that dust on us. Now, I'm not a Bucks fan. I think that's pretty well documented. But, I mean, they were wildly mistreated there. From the name change, I think they were Max and Jeremy Buck, which is just like the most literal, like Stone Cold Steve Austin is going to be Chili McFreeze kind of name change you could think of. And if you're, they're not the only ones that were having financial difficulties at the time. Remember, one of the women was like working at Sunglass Hut while on national television because the TNA contract was not paying her bills. If these two very talented guys are getting the spotlight, getting matches, we're still talking about 10 years later, and they can't afford to buy a chicken sandwich on the way home, you know, things are terribly awry.
Yeah.
I'm of the belief that the Bucks, you know, they weren't ready to be main guys yet back then. I'm still not entirely sold on them as top guys, but that's just my personal biases. At the time, though, I mean, it could have been a solid middle of the card act, making solid middle of the card money, and there would have been nothing wrong with that, instead of just being complete afterthoughts, which they were.
And it wasn't even as if they were complete afterthoughts or put in a position where they were risks. Like, as much as, you know, my eternal defense and against the Bucks and toward the style that the Bucks espouse that the Usos borrowed is, you never have to worry about the Young Bucks not showing up to a town because one of them has a DUI. Like,
right.
They're just very boring. Now, granted, you don't want to go diving into their dad's social media because that's a cesspool of just, dear sweet Jesus. But that's a different deep dive for a different day. But in terms of availability, you never had to worry about them doing dumb things other than in the ring and just generally being wrestling nerds that kind of hung around. And at that point, they weren't lifting too many weights, so they were just kind of these skinny – Triple H would have said skinny fat guys flipping and doing flippy doos. Why? I don't get in a company where you had, by my count at the time they were in it, at least 10 people who you at any given moment would have on a Deadpool. You would want to maximize some guys who obviously the crowd in some portions at that point, obviously not everyone, appreciated, and you could monetize, as we've clearly seen through Pro Wrestling Tees.
Yeah, they had, you know, obvious trouble cases at the time, like skinny Perk Angle. And then you had guys who came in there reasonably healthy, like Samoa Joe, who they're allowing himself to throw flat back drop kicks on flights of stairs. You know, why not let these guys who are kind of the masters of this controlled, the wrestling ring and ladders and tables are a playhouse kind of environment. Why not just let them do their thing? If you're willing to exploit that, then give these guys the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, and I do want to take a pause before we jump to the next one and give Kylan an opportunity because I know he had a couple. I want to point out that, and I put this in my notes, this isn't the current Impact. Like Steve said, the current Impact, I still have my issues with because of Sammy Callahan and some of the other silliness they're doing, but their treatment of Tessa Blanchard as basically the star that they don't need other titles for the women because they think women can compete for every other. If you have, the Knockouts title, and then they're eligible to win any other title, including the Impact heavyweight title. They just announced that during the conference call they did this week. And that's a long way because of Tessa. And that's a very forward thinking thing. A couple of weeks ago, Jackie Pratt, who was my guest, mentioned that for her as a woman fan and as a woman PhD candidate fan that works in the area of literature and words meaning things literally, she did not understand why, if we're going to have a men's and women's division, why only the women's division titles would get the moniker of their gender and how that othered them. And so Impact doing something as simple as that was pretty cool. So don't, for those of you who are Impact fans, if you're in TNA Mecca, you probably aren't listening right now. But if you're an Impact fan and you're listening to this and you're like, hey, what the heck? Just keep the faith. I enjoy some of the things on the show. And, of course, our personal wrestling savior, Jordan Grace, is there. So have grace. You'll see my face. That's my new rule in 19.
Yeah, if she grabs one of those Rascal Boys in a bear hug, I mean, it's a wrap.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, OVE, other than Sammy Callahan, has been a joy to watch. But
yes,
her?
So I've been a Chris defender going back. I think other people kind of saw them the way I see the Bucks, and that, you know, they were kind of bland, just Midwest babyface guys, and they've done a total transformation. And like that that cutter from the top, like the intercept cutter, my God, like that, mm-hmm. the precision it takes to pull that off just blows my mind. And I'm glad they are getting some steady paychecks now.
Yeah, they are. It took a while. They were a group. And even one of my best friends, Chris Maitland, who's been on the Deep Dive a few times, I'm actually going to go meet with him. And he's one of the crew that's coming to that dinner I'm going to be going to after this. He hates, I can tell you the moment, because he texted me at like 6 o'clock in the morning, the exact nanosecond he realized he hated the Young Bucks was Wrestle Kingdom, I want to say 10, when they went down to the ring in the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title match. And most Americans prior to Harold Mage taking over would talk into the camera because they knew the Japanese side of the house wouldn't understand and wouldn't care.
Right.
And usually in the case of like the Bullet Club, they would be cussing a blue streak and all sorts of wild stuff. But with the Bucks, they're like, spoilers, we're going to win. And then they won. And then they on the way out, they're like, we told you we would win. And I could feel like I didn't even have to look at, because I think because at that point, like every year during Wrestle Kingdom, I try to run as long as I can on the treadmill. That's my own running man dedication and also attempt to keep myself from being that wrestling fan in any event. He's just like, I hate these guys. And I thought it was cute. I mean, but it was like, I knew. And so when I looked at the Chris boys, I had guilt to hand the God. I had guilt by association because once I saw them with Sammy Callahan, I thought they were going to be scumbags of the highest order. And no, they're pretty good.
Yeah, they're juggalos, so that kind of counts against them in a lot of circles. But
well, yeah, Fago Fury.
Yeah, before they were, you know, clean cut babyface looking boys, but they had these terrible juggalo tattoos all over them. So I think that part of the aesthetic, you know, kind of crushed them. Now that they've kind of leaned more into the dirtbag persona, I think they're in the sweet spot. If not there yet, they're getting very close.
Yeah, and I'm hoping they keep building on them because, like I said, Impact has a pretty good roster. And from what the reports are saying, that they just gave some generous raises to the lower and mid-card as a thank you for all of the sacrifices they made. Sacrifice! In the last few weeks. I really appreciate that Cyrus and his crew have that finger on the pulse in a way that maybe they, more so than a multi-billion-dollar company does with their people that are doing the same thing. But again, that's a deep dive for another moment. And before we go back down your list, like I promised, I want to give my main man in Jersey a shot. Kylan, welcome back. What can we
Thank
do you for?
Thank you, Rich. Before I give you my official list, I would just like to say that our friend Steve, who I know worked in Ohio Valley Wrestling as a, shall I say, would writer's assistant be a correct title for you, Steve?
No, I was actually a young boy wrestler would probably be the closest equivalent.
Oh, so you actually wrestled?
Yes, I wrestled there for about 4 months in 2006.
So, therefore, you should understand what I'm about to. Part of the reason why James Storm went back to Impact at the time that he did, which I don't know if you guys knew this, was James Storm's wife, Danielle, was about to give birth to their second child, and I think James probably knew that if he signed a full WWE deal, he probably would not stay in WWE developmental very long and would be forced to go into the full-time main roster road schedule. So Triple H told them, whenever you're ready to come back here, we like you. The door is always open.
Well, I wonder if that door is still open now, 4 years later. That's my only counter to that. Is, you know, now he's in his early 40s, and, you know, does he kind of wish he was able to jump on that opportunity when it arose?
Yeah, I wonder that much, but that's most of the reason why he claimed he went back to him, is because he wanted to be home more, and I think he probably knew that if he signed with WWE, he would almost never be home.
Yeah, I could see that, but I would say the especially with the idea of, like, I'm never going to bemoan anyone making a decision for their family. That's not ever anything I'm ever going to want to do. But my counter to that would be, especially at the time of NXT when they brought him in and they were soft stealing as many stars from Impact as they could without admitting they were doing so, he would have been in the catbird seat a la AJ a few months later, if I remember my timelines correct, where he could have asked for some of that time.
Yeah,
but I
don't know why he didn't think of that, but he clearly should have.
Yeah, I'm always of the opinion in any sport, in any time of life, when you have the advantage against management, and this is speaking to someone in a position now where I am management in some regard in my day job, use it. And so if my staff need money and they can justify it and I can justify that to HR and my bosses, I have no problem doing that, because I think there's too much made in the world in the idea of working X number of hours to prove how much you are loyal to a company, when that all it does is guarantee you have less time doing anything else you want to do in life. Like, case in point, I was at work last night till midnight for an alumni event. I was happy to support my staff, but that wasn't something I had to be at. It was there. I was there because if they were going to do it, I want to leave from the front. A lot of times I found in pro wrestling, not too many people leave from the front. And so that's why in the case of this, I don't know how this turned here, but in the case of like AEW, the sooner they prove that they're a profitable company, the sooner I want to see them provide a base level of insurance for their staff, because that's what they talked about. With WWE, you're a multi-billion dollar company. If you can go to Crown Jewel in Saudi Arabia, you can have an Evolution pay-per-view in an 8,000 person arena every year around that time and justify your women being slapped in the face. If you are an Impact, you can decide that Tessa Blanchard and Jordynne Grace need as much frontline spotlighting as they have done, and take a little bit of that off of a Sami Callihan, who you really Sami Callihan is, and Big Mike, because neither of those guys to me need to be at the front, the face forward of any national wrestling company, in my humble opinion. And I'll get off my soapbox now. What questions did you have, or what observations did you have for us, Kylan, in terms of people who really they missed the mark on?
So my first person on my list of candidates for people who really deserve an opportunity to be a cornerstone of Impact but did not get it goes to someone who is going to take us way, way back in time, and that person is the purveyor of the power star, period, Monty Brown.
Oof. Steve, what do you think about the Pounce Master?
I think Kylan is correct here. You know, obviously, Monty Brown is completely out of the business now, and it sounds like for good reasons. Like he put family first, and sometimes you have to do that no matter what gifts you have. The TNA, I think they did a good job of positioning him in the top mix. However, they never let him have a run as the top guy. Part of that is being unfortunate enough to be around during the Jeff Jarrett is 2003 Triple H era of TNA, which nobody was going to get a great shine. But yeah, I will definitely co-sign that Monty Brown did deserve a better look in TNA.
Yeah, and I agree. I think timeline wise, to your point, and I don't want, because this is the, I think he just put up on Twitter the second anniversary of him being sober. I don't want to kind of bury the man with, you know, I don't want to damn him with that praise, but the Jeff Jarrett black hole of, that's really the big thing. And I dealt with that the last 2 weeks. I've been on either the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast or some of the stuff we did with the East Coast cast, because a lot of fans see Cody and AEW in that same vein. And my counter has always been Jeff Jarrett was never over when he did these things.
Right.
He was just a dude that would show up in a Slapnut shirt. Like, I can tell you in Pittsburgh, when Cody came out, first of all, he has the Starship Enterprise entrance, which gets people excited. And after talking to their excess people, I've always been complaining about the noise level. Like, I wanted it to be louder, theme songs to be louder, kind of WWE level, because I thought it was a tech issue. And it was actually because they want to make sure some of the people with sensory issues don't get overwhelmed. And so it's like a muted sound when you're in the arena. But then you've been to the shows, you know. And so I thought that was just something they were screwing up, kind of like the, you know, hiring the Impact guy for your video camera work was a bad move. That's something I will scream to the rooftops with AEW, because that guy, talk about him stealing a bag. I have not seen more missed shots. Like, every time I see my dear sweet nephew from Mexico, Phoenix, do his second half of their tag finish, diving through the ropes to incapacitate the opponent, you just see legs.
Yeah, he disappears into oblivion every single time. It's something I've picked up on, too. Yeah, that guy's been stealing bags since the 80s, since World Class. Like, it's insane that he still gets work.
And it's even funnier when I listen to, like, oh, go ahead, Kylan.
I'll tell Keith Mitchell how much you like him, Rich.
Well, see, I forget. You're the man with all the connect. But here's the deal with Keith, and if you can tell him, it's all love. It's just, come on, man. Like, if I'm doing the deep dive and someone's asking me a question and I have no idea what pro wrestling is, that's one thing. I know he knows better. It's just give me more, as Brittany would say.
my next person on the list of missed opportunities within TNA / Impact is a person much like Monty Brown, who they may have had runs as a top guy in Impact, but they were placed in situations where they were never allowed to be on their own, so we didn't get to see them shine in their best capability. To me, would be current WWE agent Chris Abyss Park.
Ooh. Now, okay, so I'm going to push back a little bit because I feel like Abyss got the Lifetime Achievement Award for Impact. He basically was there until the lights went out in the first iteration. What about you, Steve? Because I want to hear from you guys. Maybe I missed something because I felt like he really did get – they plumbed the depths of the Chris Park and Abyss character.
Yeah, I liked – you know, I thought Abyss was okay in his role. At first glance, he's kind of a – at the time, I looked at him almost like a dollar store Mankind. But, I mean, really, that wasn't fair to him. He was much better than that. And I think Impact was the perfect position for him because he's a big guy in the sense that Matt Bloom is a big guy. You know, he's going to be a giant in some places, and in other places he's just going to be a big guy among big guys. So yeah, I thought they did a pretty good job with his positioning. You know, he got a world title run. He beat Sting. And then when he started to slow down, I mean, Chris Park was a brilliant turn. You know, they were able to milk a lot of time out of that and extend some paydays for my man, you know, right up until the end. So, yeah, I think he got a fair shake. You know, maybe they could have kept him on in an agent role, but I think Triple H was smart in plucking the, you know, the behind-the-scenes guys that were worth getting more than the wrestlers.
That's fair. My next person would be the now current NWA World Champion Nick Brutus Magnus, as he was known then, Aldis.
Oh, I mean, that one, I'm not going to lie. I thought that Nick Aldis was, as Magnus, I thought he was basically Hugh Jackman stunt double pro wrestling edition. I thought he was a very pretty man. I said that he was a very lucky man to be married to our favorite aunt in pro wrestling. But outside of that, I didn't see it. The second he started with the 10 pounds of gold and he got to give these old school NWA interviews and the stuff he's currently doing and the new NWA, I love that man. And I never want to see him anywhere near WWE because for the same reason, I would argue what you're seeing right now with Aldis is what we would see with Galloway if he was able to be in a place like NWA because we saw that with him in Impact and everywhere else in the Indies. And somehow the ability to talk disappears. What about you, Steve?
Yeah, I think that this current NWA, like, I don't think he would maybe get the opportunity to shine as much as he is there. This old-style NWA champion role is perfect for him. And think of what the NWA title has been for a long time prior to that. He was, oh, God bless him, but you know, guys like Tim Storm. You know, he's Storm is fine for National Guard armories in, you know, Huntsville, Alabama, but he's not the old-style touring world champion. Nick Aldis fits that to a T. You talked about the unfair comparison to Jeff Jarrett and Cody. But outside of my fit of rage when I thought that Okada might lose to Marty Scurll at All In, the most the most invested I was in any match that night was Cody and Nick Aldis, and that's because both of them played their roles to perfection. you know, maybe he wasn't ready yet when he was in Impact. The whole British Invasion squad is kind of a blind spot for me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's possible that they let that slip through their fingers, but I would argue that he's perfect where he is right now.
Yeah. And I think to your point too, this is going to be one of those hot take things I didn't want to mention with Impact, but I think it would be better for Marty Scurll to be in WWE.
Oh, absolutely.
I think he would be so much better in NXT in particular, where they could pay him a lot of money to stay in Orlando and do all of his crazy villain gimmickry and stay far away from you and the three-state rule we have set up.
I think if he went to AEW.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I'd be more than happy to ship him off to the UK territory, and he can do his thing on Wednesday afternoons with Tyler Bate and Wolfgang and those fellows.
Tyler Bate and the gang. It's coming soon. It's like a radio show. And I threw in our group me a picture of John Moxley when he was at Final Resolution back in, I think it was like 2010, 2012. Like, you have all these guys who were there for like a week, 2 weeks, 2 months.
Yes.
And it's, you know, I'm not gonna bemoan them on that. But I think having that many whiffs should say it's time for you to go. But at this point, and I want both of your opinions, they've outlived what was the competition in WCW.
Yeah, I
think they've lasted longer. God help.
Yeah, the difference is that. That they had an owner for a long time in the Carters that it was almost like U.S. Bates in the toy. Bob Carter would spend whatever dollar amount he needed to keep his kid off his back. So as long as Dixie wanted to hang out with Vince Russo and the wrestlers, he was willing to pony this money up. And really, they would have prospered just as they were if it weren't for their insistence on keeping Vince Russo around and then subsequently Spike finding out about it. That's the biggest secured bag of them all, really, is losing that Spike deal.
Yeah.
Since then, it's just been one misadventure after another. And that's the only reason they're still alive, is that there was an owner who was not afraid to lose money. And now, just through miracle after miracle, I've often said, 15 years from now, all other wrestling will be gone and Impact will be playing on the little gas station, the little monitor at Chevron when you're pumping your gas. You're going to catch 18 seconds of Impact while you're buying your Charleston shoes.
Just think now Impact can say they have the world's biggest television star on the board of their ownership group in Steve Harvey.
I mean, not too many people can say that. You can have Steve Harvey show up. You can have, you know, I don't know if you want him to show up because he might. He seems to be the type similar to when I was watching Fox, when they do the commercials for WWE, and Troy Aikman will talk about Andre the Giant for 30 minutes. And it's like, oh, that's great, but my man's been dead for 25 years. Like, can we move it to another, like, can you fake one? Can you say that lukewarm Bob Austin is doing good or, you know, something like that? Like, good Lord. And so I think that's the danger. Steve Harvey isn't a wrestling fan. He's going to make them look bad.
Well, we had I brought this up in the group chat, the opportunity of friends of Steve Harvey popping in and out, having Cedric the Entertainer as the Impact GM just warms my heart.
Oh my God, that'd be great.
I love the idea of him squaring off with OVE. I'm like, yo, Sammy call a who? Sammy call a cab. You're fired, boy.
Well, remember now, when Steve Harvey first took over the helm of Family Feud for his first 5 years, Impact and Family Feud taped next door to each other. So I happen to know that Steve would go to watch Impact tapings in between Family Feud taping days.
Oh, well, that is definitely that's information I was not privy to. So thank you for that, Kylan. That's actually that would maybe he could be then a little bit more of a help than I thought at first.
Yeah, it's possible. And the final person I had on my list of missed opportunities and the current New Japan executive team will probably agree with me on this, would be New Japan's John Cena himself, Okada, and their Impact ridiculous Green Hornet ripoff character for him of Okado, where they have Samoa Joe walk around with a big machete in his hand looking for him to abduct him out of the bowels of Universal Studios.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, him as Kato is the all-time bag fun. Like, I feel bad bringing that one up because I'm trying to think of an example outside of wrestling where someone would look at that and say, ugh, how could they do that? Can you think of one, Steve, that was so egregious where you just don't bring it up anymore because it's like
it's the child seven on Married with the Children.
Oh, well done. Oh,
just
man.
One day seven goes upstairs and he just never comes back and we're all better for it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, what do you feel about the Okada thing? I mean, you mentioned that I, at the time, you know, he was a young boy, so I thought it was going to be talent. But I've mentioned with Sean Radican several times, while that was going on, you had Watanabe and Ring of Honor basically sitting in an apartment in New Jersey, not working on Excursion as well. And so until he became a beefy boy evil. So Ring of Honor is not innocent in that sort of situation either. And I can see why New Japan made New Japan of America now, because every time they would send someone to the United States to learn on Excursion, they'd get turned into the Tempura Boys. Hey, my gimmick is I like spicy food.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, in the past when the Japanese young guys would get sent over here on Excursion, you would either end up with a situation like Great Muda, where they would be highlighted and come out far better for it, or you would end up with things like Shinya Hashimoto in USWA, where he was just not really contributing much of anything. I think the difference in this Okada Excursion, well, this is post Yoshihiro Tajiri, where you could expect to see a gentleman of his talents reasonably highlighted in an American promotion. And the fact that they did less than nothing with him is really quite egregious. I mean, I wasn't watching it. Impact had already kind of burned me out by that point, so I wasn't really closely paying attention. I remember him being there, but I remember nothing about him except for reading the name and whatever the B show was. I can't even think of what that – Explosion?
Yep.
He was Explosion Zone Kazuchika Okada. That's all I remember about him.
I'll just say this. Be glad you don't remember that era. It was very disturbing television.
That is, yeah, that's tough.
If I was Vince Russo, I would be so ashamed that I allowed myself to write that level of disturbing television for that many years.
Yeah. And I that was definitely, and you also have to have a basis in reality where you understand that was a mistake you made, as opposed to not being a part of it, which, you know, that's not something Vince has. And oh, looking at the time, I'm gonna thank you, my friend. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend. We're gonna have to hop on down the road. Take care, and I'll see you with that next show. Because Steve and I am gonna have to finish up strong with some of his list before we roll out of here. So, Steve, who did we miss? Is there anyone we missed that was like a big name for you?
I, looking back at it when I researched, I don't know for sure that I can blame this one entirely on TNA, but Elix Skipper should have been a made man after that cage walk back at Turning Point 2004. And it just never came together for him. He was the Jannetty of that Triple X team with Christopher Daniels, to the point where they do the breakup. And he gets, you know, the spot of his lifetime in during the breakup match, which, you know, just the worst luck. So he ends up teaming with David Young. They do nothing with them. He requests a release, comes back, and forms Triple X again with Chris Daniels and Loki, who had become Sinshi by that point. And then that falls apart because Daniels loses Feast or Fired, and he has to be Suicide for a year, or Curry Man, or whatever the hell he was. And then low-keyed his way out of a job again. And he said, the heck with it, I'm done. Got released in 2008, and it looks like he's managing an Applebee's these days. But there was
Know who Bees this is. Prime time here, prime time there.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you're telling me? Does he say that every time he opens the Applebee's? Because I would.
I'm just saying that this gentleman who was a rock star in Team Canada – in the dying days of WCW, one of the few guys that gave you anything to be excited about, stole the show in essentially the farewell match of his team. And you can't even find something backstage to do for this guy. You know, he's stuck doing them 2-for-20 appetizer deals and selling the Dollaritas. Come on, man.
He's got to have that little manager card in the back pocket when someone's complaining there was a hair in their pasta. And that's dark. That's dark, man. Ugh. I had my last one was, and I feel like, again, it was something where time determined this more than anything, and that was the fumbled bag of Paul Heyman. You guys kind of talked about it a little bit with the idea of what was going on with Hogan and Bischoff and going to the King of the, not the King of Bros that we know, but the King of Bro, and how they fumbled the spike bag. Which really has a multiplicative effect on the rest of the wrestling industry, because even with whatever contract AEW has, it's paltry in comparison to the money that Spike was flinging around and now has been forever flushed for wrestling companies. But the opportunity to bring in Paul Heyman. At the time, they were looking and they said, hey, if we want this television show to work out, we think you guys should bring in Paul Heyman, make him executive director or whatever the title they had for him, president, I think. And let him take the lead. And, you know, as Wade mentions, his first thing was, we can only have one old guy. So it's Hogan or Sting. It's not going to be Hogan, Sting, Flair, et cetera. We're going to have a youth movement. And to be honest, and Steve, I want your opinion on this, because I think this is a good way to close it out. Looking at what's currently going on with Lashley and some of the other things that are kind of getting spotlighted on Raw, would that have been the slam dunk that we all thought it was going to be 7-8 years ago?
You know, it's hard to say. Because you see this in WWE now, where the roster is ridiculously rich in talent, but the people steering the ship don't know what to do with it. God love Elias. He's fine for what he is, but he was in the top mix for a lot of this year when that's a solid middle of the show, honky tonk man kind of act. Mm-hmm. When he is in that position and Aleister Black is just sitting in a room talking to himself for months on end, you have a real issue. And, you know, I think it's, I don't want to say a universal thing, because I don't know how AEW is doing their writing, but the idea of a writing team just has to go. TNA and
if
WWE.
If it helps for you, they basically do a group me like we do.
Oh, and I can tell you from experience, we have no power in the wrestling business. We come up with some damn good ideas in our group me. So I think that style of interaction is a lot better than, you know, you see these behind the scenes specials on the network now, where there will be 60 people in these rooms. And I don't understand how any of it gets done, especially when the head of it all is a 72-year-old man who doesn't sleep and doesn't understand the way things work in the world anymore, who will just come in and just knock all the Legos down and demand you have them rebuilt by 8 p.m. Eastern.
With
TNA, through a lot of these trouble years being headed by Russo and Dixie Carter's insistence on that, you know, I think no matter who they had or who they positioned near the top, I don't think it was going to work consistently. They were just doomed. Like when the brain is non-functioning, the body can only do so much.
The one thing that stood out to me in the back of my head when all the Heyman rumors got revealed after the fact was that, given we knew, again, with the benefit of hindsight, what happened with Russo, it would have been a hilarious reversal of fortune for the situation that got Heyman fired from SmackDown, allegedly, where you would have had Heyman giving the ideas and Russo would have been on the conference call secretly feeding things to Dixie. And he probably still would have sent Brad Shepherd. God, I got to do the sign of the cross like 8 times so he doesn't appear and get something wrong in the house. And he still sent it out to wrestling media folks and then said, you know, these marks of lying, bro, I never said nothing. And then they're like, oh, here's the email, man. Stop being an a-hole. And he's like, bro, I was working you all. It's like, no.
All right.
Nothing's more annoying to me in the world of pro wrestling than because just own up. Take the loss. That's everything in life. I am happy to admit when I'm wrong.
So who do you think would be in the current Lashley storyline had Heyman taken the book back then?
If Heyman had taken the book back then, the Lashley storyline would have been, I would say, oh God, we're going back. It would have been Gail Kim.
I
tried to completely redo Kimono Wanalea.
Exactly. My God.
Witness tonight, Gail Kim.
And the chef crying in the corner.
Yep. Ain't no party like a Paul Heyman party because a Paul Heyman party got cucks. What?
My God.
So, yeah. So, with that said, I guess that's a good way as any to bring a close to this party. Steve, thank you again, my friend, for always being on. Thank you for answering the call and providing such an entertaining topic for this episode. Where can folks give them a reminder where they can find you? Any shows you got down the line or any other places, any appearances you're going to make?
All right, guys, you can find me at Not Dr. Death is my Twitter. It's a private account, but feel free to send me a friend request. I approve most of them. For a full archive of a lot of my non-wrestling appearances, you can find me at Place to Be Nation Pop on the podcast feed. I recently appeared on, I can't think of the name of the show now, the five-star match game. Yeah, on the Voices of Wrestling Network, the five-star match game, I was the contestant on the most recent episode of that, appearing with Lee Malone of the Days of Thunder podcast and the wrestling genius, Daniel Maccabi. So I won't give any spoilers. I won't Young Buck my appearance there. But I highly encourage you to check that out. And otherwise, you know, follow Rich's endeavors, follow the Pro Wrestling Torch. You know, there's a lot of good analysis coming out every week from these guys, and not just from old man Bruce, our favorite uncle. The new class is coming on strong over at the Torch.
Well, I appreciate the firm handshake and the eagle there. I do want to thank y'all for listening. As always, dive into something new. Go Plus Ultra. Go beyond where you think you can go. Stay tuned. In the next few weeks, I'm going to be having some more interviews. Chris Samsa at The Chris Samsa will be joining me in a few weeks to talk about the numbers behind wrestling. If you remember him from all the fun stuff with New Japan as far as the stats he gave to Kevin Kelly during the G1, he's going to have some stats for us about AEW, some stats about WWE, and the importance of keeping track of of those sorts of things, despite maybe having a 72-year-old owner who might not want you to do that. But with that in mind, y'all be good. Steve, again, thank you. And in the words of Steve Austin, I'll see y'all down the road.